Our final case of the morning is United States against Bullock. Mr. Campbell.
Good morning. My name is Stanley Campbell. I'm here representing Derek Bullock. This is a case involving a seizure and detention of Mr. Bullock. His contention is that as a person who had visited the house that was the subject of the search warrant, his seizure and detention a distance away from that house prior to the time that the search warrant was executed was inappropriate and was without any basis. None of the criteria...
So why wasn't his arrest supported by probable cause for the same reason the search warrant was supported by probable cause? That is, the police had probable cause to believe that that house was being used as a drug distribution point and that Mr. Bullock was its proprietor.
I don't know as though the search warrant would necessarily, the application and the warrant would necessarily conclude that he was the proprietor.
Well, conclusive is not the standard. Probable cause.
And there was probable cause to believe, based on the warrant application, that Mr. Bullock had been at the Euclid Street address. There was nothing contained within the application that would lead to any probable cause determination that he resided there, that he was an occupant, that he was a tenant of any kind. The best that could be said was that on three occasions, prior to the time they applied for and got the search warrant, Mr. Bullock had been seen in a month's time period, leaving that residence.
And then doing things that drug dealers do. Frequent stops, short visits, people leaning in the car and so forth.
In the mind of the police officer, that's certainly true. But I guess the question is, if someone has been seen leaving this residence, and on one of the occasions there wasn't any information about what he did, on the other two occasions the officer's testimony and what was contained in the affidavit was that Mr. Bullock was seen making several stops and people either getting into his car or communicating with him in the car. There was nothing about, by the way, how great a time frame was involved here, the distance he had traveled, how many stops he had made, could have been two, could have been 100. There wasn't anything other than the observation that he had made.
These observations are the observations you make of drug dealers. If you observe a 10-year-old going up to a house and leaving a piece of paper and then going next door and leaving a piece of paper and then going next door and leaving a piece of paper, you can infer that the kid is delivering newspapers on a newspaper route. I mean, why can't you make the same inference for a drug dealer?
If you're starting from the conclusion that he's a drug dealer, then your observations necessarily support your...
There is probable cause to believe that that building is a drug distribution point, right? And my question is, given what the police knew about his behavior, why you can't add two and two together and you get probable cause to arrest him? And it's... Then you just ignore all this auto stop and being present while the search is conducted and so on. There's probable cause, seems to me, that predates the execution of the warrant.
Well, if that were the case, then I suppose the officers could have applied for an arrest warrant to...
You don't need an arrest warrant to arrest somebody in a public place.
Do not.
You only need an arrest warrant to make an entry into a private place to effect an arrest, and Mr. Bullock was arrested in a public place.
He was detained. He wasn't arrested until after the search had been conducted. I guess my point is that the search warrant certainly means that a state court judge found there was probable cause to believe that there was drug activity occurring at that residence and issued the warrant allowing for the search. It seems to me that if you say, well, that in and of itself means that anybody who is a part of that residence, there's probable cause to believe that they've been involved in drug activity and they can be detained, then there's no necessity for all of the gobbledygook and rationale and stuff that the Supreme Court went into in the Michigan Summers case in terms of whether there's a basis for detaining someone based upon preventing flight or minimizing the risk of harm to the officers or promoting the orderly search of the residence. You could have had just a flat rule that said, well, anybody who's associated with that house at the time or before we execute the police execute the search warrant, they can be detained. They can be arrested. But that's not what they've said.
We've got much more than that here.
Pardon me?
We've got much more than that here, not just an occupant of the house or who happened to be there at the time that the search warrant was executed, but someone who had been seen on multiple prior occasions by the police engaged in conduct associated with that house, coming and going and making frequent stops after leaving and so forth, indicative of drug dealing. So it's much more than just, you know, an attenuated association with the house.
I missed the first part of what you said. Did you make reference to the key? Maybe I misheard you. I'm sorry.
No.
Okay.
He had been seen on multiple occasions.
Leaving the house.
Not just leaving the house, but engaged in conduct consistent with a drug courier or distributor from that location. So this is far more than just being present at the house at the time the search warrant was executed or someone having a very attenuated connection with the stash house. He's working it.
Well, I... I guess if you're asking me, in terms of the, I don't know as I necessarily agree. Of course, you may have a different view. That simply observing someone making stops and meeting with people gives you a basis for legally determining that that person is a drug dealer.
That's not all that there was.
Well, that was pretty much all there was in the warrant application, other than you can throw in the anonymous tip that somebody by the name of Quick was selling drugs out of the house. But the other point, another point to be made is that, and I think the state, the government conceded that this anonymous tipster, there wasn't any basis for determining reliability or credibility. But the other thing is, what wasn't present in terms of their observations over this month period, if you want to say this is a drug house, in my experience, when police officers make an application for a search warrant for a drug house, what they're going to have observed is a lot of traffic in and out of the house if they're going to say that somebody's selling drugs out of that house. There's nothing about that in the search warrant application or in the record before the court. There's nothing indicating that there was any drug activity going in or out of that house other than three times when they see Mr. Bullock leaving the house, and on two of those occasions in a one-month time period, he meets with some people along the way.
But on the night of the search, when the car stopped, Ms. Wilhelm admits that she's got marijuana back at the house.
She does.
And he just came from that house.
That's correct.
And so that fits into what the police know at that point.
That is correct.
And the arrest,
those were the facts.
Ultimate arrest is for visiting a common nuisance.
Right, right. The marijuana, if memory serves me, was found on the dining room table by the police at the time they executed the search warrant. There wasn't anything in the record to indicate that Mr. Bullock had any awareness that there were drugs in the residence.
Probable cause. came out of that house. He's with her a few minutes later.
But by the same token, you could say that if you or I or anyone else has been a visitor in a house and you leave that house and sometime later the police go in and find cocaine or marijuana or whatever they found, that I must have somehow been aware of the fact that there were drugs in that house. They're two disjointed facts, unconnected.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell.
I'm done. Thanks.
Ms. Lowry.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Leslie Miller Lowry, and I am the AUSA that has handled this case from the beginning. It is the position of the United States that there was no Fourth Amendment violation in the stop, brief detention, or return of Derek Bullock to the Euclid Street address. The driver of the car that Mr. Bullock was in had a suspended license. That gave the officers probable cause to search the vehicle, or to stop the vehicle, excuse me. Their authority to stop the vehicle then gave them the authority to detain the passengers during the course of the stop. If during the course of that stop they develop a reasonable suspicion that that individual is engaged in or is about to be engaged in criminal conduct, they can prolong the stop to investigate those reasonable suspicions. It's the position of the United States that that is exactly what we have here. Based on the observations that had been made by law enforcement of the activity engaged in by Mr. Bullock himself, this short stay type of traffic, short visits to various locations emanating from the Euclid Street address, combined with the statement of Ms. Wilhelm that there were drugs in the house, certainly gave law enforcement at the scene a reasonable suspicion that there was criminal activity being engaged in.
I'm surprised you don't argue that there was probable cause at the time they stopped the car and Ms. Wilhelm admits that there were drugs back at the house.
I could have argued that.
But you don't.
No, I did not argue that.
So when he's taken from the car back to the house, is that pursuant to a Terry stop and detention, or is that an arrest?
It is not. It's not our position that that is an arrest. Similar.
Well, he's in cuffs. He's in the back seat of a police car, and he's, moved 15 blocks or so back to the house?
He has certainly been seized. He is not free to go. That is clear from the facts of the case. However, the fact that his tie to that house has been firmly established by the officer's observations and the fact that it was his behavior that formed the basis for the search warrant, if we look at Michigan versus Summers, it's the government's position that returning him to the scene of where the search warrant was being executed did not constitute a Fourth Amendment violation. He was only a short distance from the house at the time that the vehicle was stopped, and the distance, as I said, back to the residence was very brief. I liken that similarly to the detention that is had when there's reasonable suspicion that there's drug activity and the person is detained long enough to bring in a narcotics detecting dog. The person's detained for a period of time, arguably longer than it took for the police officers to stop Mr. Bullock in this case and even return him back to Euclid Street. So similarly to detaining someone in order to bring in a drug-detecting dog, have the dog run around the car, that period of time has been found not to constitute a Fourth Amendment violation. It's the government's position that likewise returning him and detaining him for that period of time did not constitute a Fourth Amendment violation. And that given the fact that we're talking a short distance here, that it was still reasonable reasonable and common sense to return him. He wasn't, as Judge Sykes said, just some happenstance person. Many of the Summers line of cases deal with somebody that just happened to be there. Well, Mr. Bullock didn't just happen to be there. He was firmly tied to that residence, and it was his behavior that formed the basis for the granting of the search warrant. Even absent, and I think I've touched on this briefly, even absent the reasonable suspicion, it was proper to detain Mr. Bullock pending the execution of the search warrant. On this issue of occupant, he does not have to live at the house. He does not have to be the leaseholder, the bill payer of the residence to be an occupant of the house. The cases are clear that even a transient visitor, a salesperson, may be an occupant of the house. Mr. Bullock was more than that. He was seen at various times of the day and night at that residence. By his own testimony at the suppression hearing, he had been at that house since 7 o'clock in the morning. They were stopped somewhere around or left somewhere around 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So he is at minimum an occupant of the house. So stopping him, detaining him, and returning him to Euclid Street were well within the bounds of the Fourth Amendment, and his subsequent arrest for visiting a common nuisance was supported by probable cause. The marijuana was on the coffee table in the house in plain view. There were photographs offered as evidence in the suppression hearing that show just where it was. So it defies common sense for Mr. Bullock to say, I've been in the house since 7 o'clock this morning. I left at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, but I did not see in any way any indication that there was marijuana on the dining room table in plain view. That being the case, it's the government's position that his arrest for visiting a common nuisance was supported by probable cause, and therefore his search incident to that arrest that recovered the narcotics at issue was warranted by the Fourth Amendment. There are no questions. That concludes the government's remarks. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. And Mr. Campbell, we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment and the assistance you've been to your client in this case. The court will be in recess until tomorrow.